It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Julie Perkins, and this week's Fed Talk is going to discuss federal cybersecurity. I'm happy to be joined in the studio with Al McColl. He's the Vice President for Cybersecurity at Robbins Joya. On the phone is Gregory Wilshussen. I hope I pronounced that correctly. He is the Director of Information Security Issues at GAO. John Lehart is also on the phone, and he's a partner at Cybersecurity and Privacy for IBM Global Business Services. And later on in the program, we're going to be joined by Ari Schwartz. He's the White House Senior Director for Cybersecurity. So welcome, everybody. And I thought we'd take, for the three of you that are here right now, if you could just give a brief introduction of who you are and what kind of work you do. You want to start here, Alma?
My pleasure, Julie. Thanks for having me on. So again, I'm Al McColl. I'm the Vice President of Cybersecurity at Robbins Joya. Robbins Joya is a contractor in the federal government area. We've been here for well over 30 years and have been the preeminent name in independent program management. And we also have a lot of other services, including now cybersecurity, enterprise architecture, as well as supporting the Performance Institute in trying to drive a higher standard for government. So prior to my work at Robbins Joya, where I help both federal agencies as well as the private sector with cybersecurity, my focus is actually a lot on incident response, but also I cover the full breadth of cybersecurity, the ecosystem there. So prior to that, I was at DHS at Customs and Border Protection as their Chief System Security Officer, and then as the Director of the DHS Security Operations Center, and happy to be here.
Okay. How about you, Gregory?
Okay, yes, my name is Greg Wilshussen, and I'm the Director for Information Security Issues at the Government Accountability Office. And our whole role and reason for existence at GAO is to provide nonpartisan, independent, objective, fact-based information to the Congress in order to help it discharge its constitutional responsibilities. And we do that by conducting audits, investigations, evaluations of federal operations and programs, and we're often referred to as Congress's watchdog. And my role at GAO is leading the information security audits and cybersecurity audits of federal agencies and programs throughout the federal government. And the types of work that we perform can include examining various different aspects of computer security or critical infrastructure protection from a cyber view on a government-wide basis to look at certain issues. For example, we just are in the process of getting ready to issue a report on agency oversight of their contractors' privacy and security processes. But we also can then look at a specific agency and drill down and look at the technical security controls over the computer networks and security controls in place at that agency and how well they're protecting their information. So it kind of gives us a unique perspective of having some very detailed technical knowledge of how agencies secure their systems, as well as taking a broader look at some of the emerging issues of the day.
Okay, thank you, John.
Yes, it's John Lehart. I'm the Cybersecurity and Privacy Service Area Leader for IBM Global Business Services in the public sector. So I've got responsibility for performing IT governance, risk management, security and privacy consulting services, and the implementation and operations of services for the U.S. government, state and local, healthcare and education. Before that, I was the Inspector General at the House of Representatives. Before that, DOT Inspector General, and before that, at GAO as well, and did the same types of work that Greg's doing. Wrote the first audit manual for IT audit back in the day, which was longer ago than any of us want to remember.
Well, thank you, and I really am pleased that you all were able to take the time today and share with us your expertise. Greg, what is who oversees all of government cybersecurity?
Well, who oversees it? There's from a responsibility, OMB has mandated authority and responsibility for helping to oversee information security across the federal government. In 2010, July 2010, it transferred some of those responsibilities over to the Department of Homeland Security, and it's in the National Protection Programs Division that has assumed responsibility to help oversee the operational aspects of computer security at the federal agencies and to assist federal agencies in improving the security over their controls or over their systems.
I know that you your office recently issued a report about small agency cybersecurity, and I guess there was a report that was made to the public and one that was more restricted for the agency officials. But at least from the what I read in the public sphere, it seemed like the small agencies are having difficulty keeping up with cybersecurity requirements or best practices. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, yes, they certainly have made mixed progress in implementing, you know, the elements of information security and privacy programs as required by FISMA, which is the Federal Information Security Management Act, the Privacy Act of 1974, E-Government Act, and some of the OMB guidance that it has issued. And that's not too dissimilar from results of what we found at, you know, larger federal agencies. But, you know, like the larger agencies, these small agencies, and those are generally those with 6,000 or fewer employees, are at risk from threats to information systems that support their operations and the information that they contain. Sometimes this may contain personally identifiable information, which requires protection. And so, yes, we found that the smaller agencies, and we looked at six of them, had challenges and made mixed progress in meeting some of the requirements for performing risk assessments, for example, documenting their policies and procedures for securing their systems, developing and implementing system security plans. And those are the plans which are intended to identify the types of security controls that should be in place on their systems, as well as other aspects of an information security program, including providing training to their staff, monitoring and evaluating the security controls over their systems to assure that they're operating as intended and appropriately designed, as well as establishing incident response capabilities and the like. So, yes, they, too, have had mixed progress in implementing these types of security and privacy programs.
When I looked at is it the acronym FITARA that's sort of been bouncing around Congress, the revisions to FISMA, it seems to be more about accountability. Is there also going to be more expenditures available for these agencies, or is it just trying to streamline things?
Well, with the I can't really speak to FITAR, which I think has more to do with Federal Information Technology Reform Act that doesn't specifically address, I believe, information security. Mm. But there are a couple of bills before Congress, or at least one that I know of, that is looking to modify and FISMA. And so that in that particular bill, there are the intent, I believe, is to clarify some of the roles and responsibilities of the various different agencies and oversight agencies such as OMB and DHS, and to help improve and modernize some of the requirements that were initially in the FSMA Act of 2002.
Mm. Greg, I know we have to let you go because you have to move on to other matters, but is there anything you can share about what challenges you see in GAO sees in the immediate near future for large and small agencies?
Sure. I think one of the key challenges that agencies face and continue to face is designing and implementing a risk-based cybersecurity program, and that would be applied to both large and small agencies. In fact, you know, protecting the federal government's information systems has been on GAO's high-risk list as a government-wide high-risk area since 1997. Mm. What we and the agency inspectors generals have found is that agencies continue to report weaknesses in a large number of their information security control categories and types. You know, just for example, in fiscal year 2013, 18 out of the 24 major agencies covered by the CFO Act, or the Chief Financial Officers Act, reported either a significant deficiency or material weakness in their information security controls as part of financial reporting. In addition, the IGs at those agencies identified, or at least IGs at 21 of the 24 agencies identified information security as a major management challenge for that agency. You know, we've also noted that, you know, the challenges are pretty significant, include the fact that the number of security incidents that are being reported by federal agencies continues to rise. In fact, it's risen over the last 7 years at an order of magnitude from about 5,500 in fiscal year 2006 to over 60,000 in 2013. Mm. And that's, of course, due to a number of factors, some of which are good in terms of the agencies probably have better detection capabilities now
right.
than they may have had back then, better reporting processes as well. But it also indicates that agencies continue to have vulnerabilities in their systems and that there is an active cyber threat environment that they need to contend with.
Well, I hope maybe in the near future you can join us for a further discussion on this. It's really been quite informative, and I'm sorry it's been so brief, but I really appreciate your time, Greg, today, and look forward to talking further with you on these matters.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Julie, and I would certainly appreciate the opportunity to come back again on your show.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, take care.
Take care. We're going to take a break, and you've been listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, and we'll continue our discussion after this break and a word from our sponsor.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym. And it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explain how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, and today we're discussing cybersecurity. We're now being joined by Ari Schwartz, and as I mentioned earlier, he's the White House Senior Director for Cybersecurity. Good morning, Ari.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us today, and I appreciate the time. And I've got John Lanehart on the phone and Alma Cole here in the studio, and if you all want to I don't know how much you heard Greg at the earlier session talk, but what I was curious about is from the White House perspective, I know that you recently issued published a framework based on an executive order, I believe from, was that late last year?
It was early this year. Yeah.
Early this year. Yeah. Time has just gone away from me this year. And I wonder how much of cybersecurity is really just governed by a collaboration of best practices and how much of it is mandated by law. Are people talking to each other?
Well, you know, this is it's a problem for the economy as a whole, and as with most of the problems with policy issues in cyberspace, you know, one problem that affects one person affects everybody, and that's really the difference in this area. And one thing we know is one thing that's interesting in cybersecurity is when we see intrusions, when we see vulnerabilities, solutions come really quick to those problems. However, implementing those solutions has not come quickly, and that's because you really need everyone to work, and it really takes critical mass to get to the point of implementing solutions in order to really be able to protect individual organizations in the space. So that's really the difficulty here, is how do we get to these areas, critical mass, to push forward and solve these kind of collective action problems in this area. And so, you know, in some ways, federal agencies know more and have greater expertise than a lot of other entities around the world. But in others, we're also at greater risk because we have such a large platform for cybersecurity incidents to occur. And so we're kind of on the cutting edge of what's happening in this space in general, and really trying to figure out the economics of it and trying to get it to work is essential to that. In order to solve this issue in general, working on critical infrastructure, as you said, one of the things that we've done is to try and step up a level and try and put together kind of principles that can work across different sectors so that we can get at this kind of more of a collective action problem, try and put out the standards in place. This is not undoing the work that federal agencies have already done. It's a way of characterizing the management of cybersecurity risk and the measurement of cybersecurity posture. It's not really additional guidance for departments and agencies, but it's something that they can look at and work with their contractors on, work with their vendors on, to make sure that what they understand to be protecting the agency and what the work that they've done maps to what those others do that may have other ways of measuring how they protect cybersecurity. So, you know, it is something that we really are going to be talking about a lot more, is using this framework, the cybersecurity framework in federal agencies.
And then how much of it is, you mentioned agencies' interaction with the private sector. When I was doing my little Google research on everything, I noticed that, John, you are on the, and excuse me if I pronounce it wrong, the COBIT-5 online task force, which from a layman perspective also seemed like they had a framework for best practices on a global level. Is that correct?
Yes, and it was highly referenced in the cybersecurity framework that was published. So we did work collaboratively with the development of that.
It's exactly the work of folks like John and the people that worked on COBIT that allow us to take that in, bring that in, and kind of map this the framework to a whole range of different standards that are out there already. So it's not, this isn't really redoing that work as much as trying to pull it together. You know, for folks that use control systems, they have a whole different way of talking about this than the folks that that do financial management, for example. So how can we kind of tie that together at a higher level to bring people in and not have them understand it? And, you know, for companies, it helps them do things like be able to get better, to figure out what kind of cyber insurance they might need and how to go about getting it, and make it more easily to get it. And there's been some written about that already, how the framework can help in that area. But it also helps leadership do benchmarking, right? That's another thing that's really key. And it also helps, as I was saying before, things like vendor management, where you have ranges of different kinds of entities out there, and help them tie together some who may use different kinds of standards today, and show how they map together.
And Ari, you had mentioned, you know, that due to the breadth and the size of the federal government, you know, that has its own vulnerabilities because of that. And I guess I'm curious about what. How do you control the, 2.6 million executive employees from, it seems to me that the human fallacies, you can set up a system that can only do so much, but then people like me are operating them, and if I have to learn one more password, I'm going to shoot myself. So
right.
How do you deal with the human element of all
well,
that?
Well, I mean, there's the technical side of that and the human side of that problem in particular. I think that's true for a range of cybersecurity problems, but just to drill down on that passwords issue, I think that's something that we need. The way passwords are today, where you're not going to be able to solve that human problem. We need to get to the point where we have standards and technology that work in different environments, and that's the reason the president signed this National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace, or NSTIC, and we've been promoting that for federal agencies to begin to use NSTIC, and OMB has moved this issue forward for folks in this space. The password management today is clearly the biggest weakness that we see out there. Passwords are broken. There's not real ways for employees that have all these passwords across different systems to be able to manage them and need to change them at different rates and make them different lengths, et cetera. We have to be able to move beyond that if we're going to be successful in securing, in building real security across the board. NSTIC is really about building the structure to do that. There has been, there have been efforts within the federal government. GSA is running the ICAM project to try and work and have projects within the federal government that can utilize some of these cross-platform forms of identity that are secure and are easy to use.
Well, I hope that you all come up with a good solution, because it is, especially as you get older, I feel like I need to write it all down. And then, of course, that defeats the whole purpose of having a password. So I end up...
So it may or may not defeat the purpose writing it down. And actually, it is a huge problem. I was working with an organization at one time, and one of the employees there had just taken the required security training and came up to me and talked to me specifically about this policy. It said, never, ever write down a password. And he pulled out his password sheet and showed me the I think, 32 passwords that he had to maintain just for his job that were in different systems and different organizations and inside his own organization. And he said, okay, so yeah, how am I really realistically supposed to keep track of all of these accounts and all these passwords? So it's a huge burden. And while it's not necessarily something you recommend for a large organization, a best practice can be, finding a safe place either through a software program that's designed to do it, or even offline, to write down complex passwords rather than repeating passwords and things like that.
I mean, today, employees that have 32 passwords, as I do, and I'm sure most federal employees do, are put in a very difficult situation. They're not supposed to write them down. They're not supposed to reuse the passwords in different places. They're supposed to make them really complex things that are difficult to memorize. So that's a really difficult situation to put employees in. We need to come up with ways to get beyond that. Certainly, tying to the use of smart cards is supposed to help to do that. The more that I know that that some find that has its own usage difficulties, but as we start to use them more and more places use them, that's one way that we can cut down on having to have multiple passwords. So, you know, if we can really start to integrate some of these systems using a credential like a smart card, that's one thing that we can do to help move that forward.
And it is getting better. At the federal agency I visit, I noticed that, of course. I do have one laptop for federal agency, and they just barely went to PIV, not only for the log onto the laptop, but PIV also for remote access. And that, and so my RSID token is now sitting in a drawer somewhere. And PIV, by the way, is the personal identity verification, the badges that the government's now standardized on for civilian workforce. And so the technology is there at a system-by-system level, and there's much, much more work, thanks to the White House really pushing hard on PIV activation, making sure that that is a usable credential, not only for, you know, the guns, gates, and guards to get through, but also for the IT systems, and I think they've been doing a great job with pushing that.
Thank you very much. I think it's going to continue to be a key point for us. Again, you know, we think that agencies should be looking at these seriously for both security and for ease of use. So,
well, we appreciate your insight, Ari. I know you have to get off the line, and it certainly was, as I said to Greg, I hope one time we'll be able to all sit down and have a more in-depth discussion so you can, because you clearly are, the White House is clearly on the front of helping us all be a little more secure and not have to learn a billion passwords. So I personally appreciate that. And I hope that you're successful with rolling out this approach. So thank you very
much. That
would
be great.
For your time.
Thank you very much. I hope to speak to you in the future.
Okay, thanks. We're going to stop here for a break, and we'll continue our discussion after this break and a word from our sponsor. And I hope that maybe we can, with John and Alma, sit here and you all can discuss what you've been hearing from GAO and the White House, and where you see things going forward and what sort of time frame we're looking at. But you've been listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio at 1500 AM.
Geico's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from Geico. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact Geico today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote. And be sure to request your special federal savings.
If you're a federal law enforcement officer, then you know to do your job, you tap inside sources. To have a voice on policy and legislation, you join FLIOA. And when you want federal law enforcement officer news and up-to-date federal court decisions, you read FedAgent.com. If you aren't reading FedAgent.com, subscribe today. It's free. Don't let this source pass you by. I'm John Adler, President of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, and I approve this message.
I'm Deborah Roth, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Our firm specializes in helping federal employees with legal issues concerning their jobs or benefits. For two decades, we have been representing federal employees in adverse action cases, employment discrimination complaints, inspector general and internal affairs investigations, security clearance issues, and other federal employment disputes. If you have a legal concern, don't wait. Call Shaw, Bransford & Roth at 202-463-8400 or visit our website at shawbransford.com.
You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, and welcome back. I thought, John, if you don't mind stepping up, and I know that you work with federal, local, state, just the whole gamut of public sector entities. And what's your thoughts on sort of the GAO's view of things and how, what the White House priorities are?
Yeah, what's interesting, Greg referred back to the first material weakness listed by GAO on cybersecurity. And actually, when I was at DOT and the IG, we did the first report in 1988 talking about material weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
We broke into 85% of the federal budget systems, 22 different systems throughout the government. So this hasn't, you know, been more of a recent problem. It goes back even farther to 1988. And Greg's right. The, you know, we make fits and stops in trying to solve the problems, but you know, the bad guys, you know, find better ways to cause havoc in our systems. But you know, we haven't been able to move the needle that much, if you will. I hope the CDM program will do that. You know, the DHS FedSIM procurement for continuous diagnostics and mitigation.
So yeah, there, it is really a huge problem to secure those systems, and a lot of reasons because it is so complex. There's been some criticism about the number of critical security controls that that the National Institutes of Standards and Technology has put out there, but frankly, that number and having a holistic framework for measuring and assessing your risk and then addressing all those vulnerabilities is actually it's so important, because you the attacker can just use the lowest hanging fruit. If you don't dot one of your I's or cross one of your T's, even though you have all the rest of them perfect, that's all that's necessary to actually go around the rest of those security controls and infiltrate a system. So it is complex. And one of the shortcomings, I think, of the way that the FISMA is set up right now, the way that the typical certification and accreditation process that the government is set up right now, is it's done system by system very often. And some agencies made progress in trying to make it more of a holistic enterprise view. But a lot of times you see systems that are developed from the ground up very much in isolation with their own authentication, for example, and they build their own security controls on them. And the packages and security assessments they do against them usually are focusing on those systems. And then someone, a different group, does the next system down. And there's this very stovepipe nature to them, which is part of the reason why we have, you know, 32 passwords for different systems. Hmm. Whereas you really need to be able to take an architectural approach to all of your enterprise infrastructure and systems, and for that matter, your security controls, to assure that you're sharing all of the common things, you're not reduplicating work, and for that matter, that the security controls you have in place, that you're being smart about those security controls, because the same security control can be in place on all of the systems in your environment versus trying to do, you know, onesie, twosie assessments. There has been some progress in that area. I know some agencies have gone to the concept of controls inheritance, which is really important as you start to migrate a lot of these applications into, let's say, agency data centers, where if you go to a data center, you know that it has these baseline security controls that you can adopt, and then you can add on top of that. And that's somewhat the same principle that the FedRAMP approach is taken, where you are going out having an initial assessment of cloud security for service offerings to the government, that then that initial assessment can be reused again and again.
Well, you're totally correct. The holistic framework is what's normally lacking in viewpoint of agencies, and it's really not an IT issue anymore. It's a business issue. You know, it has to be addressed at the C-suite, and, you know, they've got to have the mission-based program, SCS is there to address this, look at it across the board from, again, using a holistic approach. And risk management, I mean, I think that's, NIST has issued a number of publications to help guide that. I think that's critical. You can't apply the same amount of controls for a $10,000, you know, a system that's isolated, and let's say the $10,000 asset that you'd apply to the, you know, to a mission critical air traffic control system, as an example.
How maybe it's just I think I read about a certain state, I can't remember, out in the Midwest. How often is it that there's been the security's been breached and there's you don't have knowledge of that breach for a significant period of time? I know South Carolina had that problem, I guess it was 4 or 5 years ago, with all the tax return PII information, I guess, had been scooped up. And then I read something about a month ago, another state, it took a month to realize that there even was the breach. Is that a rare event? Are entities getting better about that?
So entities are getting somewhat better, but it is far from a rare event. Mandiant, who is excuse me, now FireEye company, just been purchased by another security company. They do a lot of on-site intrusion assessment work. When someone is compromised, they find out about it. These guys are hired, and they go on site, and they publish a lot of reports about not only sort of the nature of what the problem is they found, but how long it had been there. A couple years ago, it was actually close to a year on average that an attacker would be in a network before the agency or company or whatever it was notified to the presence of that attack. And the type of attackers that were coming at these organizations as well were the type that stay in for that whole time and like to maintain persistence and keep coming back again and again. What's even worse is that the majority of those, in the majority of those cases, they were actually notified by a third party that they had this problem. They didn't find it on their own. Mm. So law enforcement or someone like that or a partner told them they have an issue. So the latest numbers from the year, I think last year or the year before, it was down more towards, you know, the 200-something day mark on average of how long intrusions were active. And it's getting better as far as people detecting, but I think still more than half easily are being detected by a third party. So it's challenging.
Wow. I guess it's not the rare event that I read about in the paper.
It's typical. And there's an old sort of cliche in the information security community that there's two types of organizations, the ones who know they've been hacked and the ones who don't.
Mm.
Not that they haven't been hacked, of course, just that they just haven't found out about it yet. It is a very, very serious problem.
John, do you think is it the cloud? My law firm went to the cloud a few years ago, and it was an initial hassle, but I feel fairly secure, I guess. But now I'm wondering, who knows? Is it the cloud going mobile with everyone, accessing their office space on their laptops? Is that causing further weaknesses in security, or are people, is their attention being drawn to the sort of the mobility workforce?
Well, the cloud and the mobile workforce can be an improvement in your security, really, if you implement it properly.
Mm-hmm.
That's the issue. Do you implement it properly? And it's not just, you know, the phones or anything else that is attached to the network. Look at your refrigerators now. They're able to access the internet. So it's anything that's connected to the cloud, if you will, the internet. It could provide vulnerabilities. What the better organizations do, they implement a control with respect to the mobile users that can have access to the system. They have them go through the normal checks and balances to make sure that the controls that are built into your laptop are also built into your mobile devices.
Mm-hmm.
For the cloud itself, you've got small entities, small federal agencies and other entities that, you know, have very minimal cybersecurity staff and/or the capabilities of those staff maybe aren't up to speed, whereas if you're in the cloud and you've got the right provider, obviously, they've got resources, you know, to back them up, getting feeds from all over the globe. They know what's coming. They can identify a threat before it gets there, and they've got a lot more capabilities than the individual small you know, small entities. So the cloud should be a good way to go. And in fact, I'm in a GMU conference now and George Mason University mm-hmm. that deals with this. It's a cybersecurity research workshop, and that's one of the key issues that was just brought up by the Department of Energy CIO.
And I was reading articles, I think I wrote on one, where the government is actually encouraging employees to use their own personal laptops and mobile devices rather than issue them. It's a part of their budget cuts. And my concern, along with the lack of privacy, because you're basically giving the government access to your mobile devices as an employee, but also how can you ensure that they've got the right security devices, that the strength of the security is accurate?
So it's really taking a different strategy. I mean, actually, the traditional IT security that we all know and love that has to do with a very tightly defined network perimeter and all the assets on it are our own. That's, I think, gone away long since for a lot of the private sector, and I think we're starting to see a lot of that go with government, especially as we get off into cloud computing, embrace mobility, and other things like that. So with mobile devices, for example, the strategy has often, even for some government-owned devices, been not looking at trying to control and lock down the entire device the way we might with a legacy laptop, but it's actually trying to control and protect the data. So instead of the whole thing focusing on maybe an application or a small suite of applications that is wrapped in its own protection, that's isolated from the operating system, from the other applications, and that can only be accessed and manipulated in very particular ways. Usually on the back end of that as well, you have virtual private network connections that will automatically connect back into the agency to get data. Now, with the scenario with laptops, for example, how that's accomplished very often is actually through the use of virtual machines, where you get a window, it looks like your desktop, and actually it is essentially a computer that's at your agency running all your applications, but you're simply getting a view onto that computer. So no data actually ever leaves the agency or that perimeter. It's actually still there, and you're just getting a view onto that on your screen, a picture of it essentially, and you're able to input. So that's actually a very, very good way of controlling data remotely versus having to worry about every last potential vulnerability for data that might now be outside of your organization.
We're going to have to take a stop here and our last break and hear from our sponsor. And I thought coming back, we'd return and you two could give sort of your prognosis on moving forward in the near future. Because as you said, John, it seems like this has been fits and spurts, for years now on cybersecurity. So you've been listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, and when we return, we'll wrap up our discussion.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, and we're ending our last segment of the show. John, I thought I'd start with you. If you could give us sort of your opinion about where we're going on things. I wonder how much of it is going to be controlled by budget, communications across federal agencies, or being able to attract talent moving forward. in order to implement, as you said, on a more global level and involving the C-suite, if you will, into ensuring that we have the appropriate risk management and tools in place. Can you share us your thoughts?
Yeah, well, you hit on a bunch of key points about sharing data and, you know, having the right staff, et cetera. I think the real issue here is that we do need to take this as a holistic approach, mm-hmm. have C-suite management involved, implement good risk management. And there's the risk management framework that DoD and NIST developed that's being now used by both DoD and the civilian agencies. I think that's a great first step. As long as we get the whole organization involved to make those kind of decisions, it's not just a technology issue, it's a business issue. Mm-hmm. The CDM program, if it, as it matures, Ari talked about the identity management. That's one of the next areas that it's going to look at. If it looks at it from a governance, risk, security, privacy perspective, pulls all that together, that's what's definitely needed. And I think we've got tools and capabilities coming out now, like security intelligence that aggregates and correlates security threats. You know, we did it for one agency where we went back over a year and identified anomalous uses of the systems at late at night, whatever. Hmm. We found people that were downloading data that they didn't have the authority to download, you know, et cetera, and then use that. The more you use it, the better information you get, the more you can predict. And we've got to move to a predictive approach as opposed to reactive. And we can't forget about the entire ecosystem, as Target found out. So it's our partners as well as, like you said, sharing with other federal agencies. It's an entire ecosystem that we've got to look at.
Well, the thing with Target, the reason why I'm wondering if it's just, like you said, perspective and money concerns, is that, at least from what I read, it came out that we have the technology to prevent the kind of access that the credit cards could be just changed to limit the theft of all that information off the credit cards, but that the U.S. is lagging behind Europe. I just heard of Europe, and it may take more of those attacks before I think finally now the credit card companies are realizing that they have to move forward. So if there's that inertia in the private sector, I imagine that that also plays a role in changing people's minds in the public sector, which can move even, I think, due to its size, a little even more slowly than the private sector does. So
I actually think that the public sector, in a lot of ways, is very advanced when it comes to risk management. That doesn't mean that it's perfect, but they've been focusing on this issue for much longer and have these frameworks and have this policy that keeps them, that assures or tries to assure that the data for which they're accountable is being properly protected. So sometimes because the transparency, maybe it seems like there are more issues in government, but I think they're, the private sector in some ways is behind. In some technology aspects, I think they can adopt a little sooner and be more rapid to things like that. But I think there's good practices to be had on both sides of that argument. Now, we talk about CDM, which is the Continuous Diagnosis and Mitigation Program. That's a program that DHS has been funding and sponsoring that's supposed to be really significantly changing the way that we look at securing systems and actually even doing the certifications and accreditations for systems. First of all, looking at, instead of taking all these hundreds and hundreds of controls, of potential security controls that's hard to track, let's focus on a couple of really big ones that we think are very important and very overarching. And then to the extent possible, let's automate those. So that not only is it easier to do that system by system, but also at any given point in time, we actually have an idea about what the vulnerabilities are on those various systems and where we need to focus our attention today to do the most good to reduce the risk as much as possible. So that is actually a very, very important effort, because some of the legacy processes, sometimes it's almost like they're just being done for themselves, mm-hmm. and you don't really utilize the results that come out of that as much as you should. Now, another thing I want to mention when I talk about risk management frameworks, going back to the framework that NIST put out, which is essentially targeted at critical infrastructure, that security framework that you mentioned, that there was some COBIT work on that. I've been helping the Council on Cybersecurity, who puts out the top 20 critical cybersecurity controls, that actually also helped to try to prioritize where you should start, and I helped them to craft that into a profile, protection profile for the framework. So one of the reasons why the framework is important, there's two big things I like about them. One is that a lot of times as you apply security, you're only thinking about what you're doing up front to try to harden everything. But the fact is, if the bad guys are well-funded, well-resourced, and keep coming at you, they're probably going to get in at some point. So you need to build a program that has that realization that at some point it will fail, and that you actually need to be able to not only identify your systems and protect your systems proactively, but then detect when there's an issue, be able to respond to that issue, and be able to recover. And that, for me, is a very, very, paints a very active picture of information security versus just people who are going out and hardening systems, and a need to be able to stay on top of attackers and to adapt to what you're seeing. The last one that I'll mention about the framework that I really like is that they do have some maturity measures built in for risk management that essentially asks the questions of the things that you're finding with your security posture, your cyber risk, how much are those things really being integrated into the rest of the environment? How much are they being briefed up? Does the board know? And because of those things that you're understanding about your cyber risk, is the business changing the way it does business to address those risks? So it's just really this maturity of how well we embrace that risk and then try to deal with it.
Both of you sound fairly optimistic about moving forward, it sounds like. I like the idea of the holistic, and also recognizing that you have to deal with the human element, and that people, you know, you can put in all the technology and security you want, but someone's got to teach us the tools and also adapt to, I think, human behavior and human, fallacies and how we operate. But it's really been a fascinating conversation. I'm really pleased that the two of you, and as well as Ari and Greg, were able to join us today. I actually feel more comforted than when I did when I first began my research on this area. And I appreciate knowing that the talent that you all possess are working for the security of our government and all our personal information that we know they possess. So thank you once again for all the time that you've given today. And that's all the time we have for our show. And Fed Talk has been brought to you by the federal employment law firm at Shaw, Bransford & Roth. And I hope everyone has a wonderful weekend. And thanks again.